Harp on Sports with Seth Harp.
You know what time it is.
3, 2, 1.
Let's do this.
Go, bartenders! Your food needs refills.
Harp on Sports, the bar, podcast, media, audio, and radio network. What do we have in store for you on this edition of the program? A little SEC tournament trek as we're down to the final week of the regular season. When it comes to the SEC basketball tournament, here's what's crazy about this. From the Gators' perspective, much better to be the 6th seed than the 5 or the 4. And by the looks of it, as long as they don't get swept this week, as long as they don't lose to Vandy and Alabama, they can sweep. And it's almost, you know, impossible for them to get up to the 5 seed. It's a weird week in which everybody above them holds the tiebreakers or they can't catch them. Or at least the teams that they're playing in front of them, or at least the teams that are playing that are ahead of them in the standings, are playing the bottom of the barrel. So we're going to look at the Gators, why they're in good shape, actually, to enter as they enter the NCAA, as they enter the SEC basketball tournament. There you go, Seth. So we're going to look at that little SEC tourney treks. NIL, no mas, as the NCAA says, that's it, we're done. Good for the NCAA. Again, they're not without fault, but the university presidents and the conference commissioners have dumped this all on them. They keep getting sued. They keep losing in court. They're like, we're not touching this anymore. Jurors, go for it, gang. Go for it. So now it all goes back to the conferences, the universities, and here you go. Here you go. So we're going to look at the inherent problems that we're going to have coming up. And also, a little onside, as in awe, inside. The onside kick, about ready to get a facelift in the NFL, and they are going to allow teams or make force teams to tell you when they're doing it, thus saving the play. People are going to freak out about this. Not me. Look at that as well. So there we go. Harp on Sports, the bar, podcast, media, audio, radio network. Follow, share, like, subscribe at Harp on Sports Twitter, at Harp on Sports Instagram, Harp on Sports Facebook page, Harp on Sports YouTube channel, Harp on Sports, the auditory route, Apple Podcast, Spotify, Buzzsprout under the Harp on Sports, the bar heading. And of course, harponsports.com. Okay, SEC tourney treks. Gators with a heartbreaking loss. South Carolina had a double-digit lead in the second half. Got beat. Winning on the road, tough. Alabama, South Carolina had the lead in both of them. Couldn't hang on. It happens. Now they return home to take on Alabama and Vandy on the road this upcoming weekend. Florida should finish 12-6 in the conference. Sit there at 10-6 right now, 12-6 in the conference, 22-9 overall. What does that do? That likely gets them the 6th seed. Now, where Florida enters this weekend, they've got a couple things going for them and a couple things going against them. One, they take on at least one team that's above them. The problem with that is Alabama, after they play Florida, gets to host Arkansas. So Bama would have to lose them both. Florida would have to win them both. And still, the tiebreakers get a little wonky. Now, how the tiebreakers work in the SEC is this. First, it's head-to-head. And you say, okay, well, they split. Yep. Florida and Alabama will have split if Florida beats them this week. Florida and Kentucky will have split if they beat them this week. So then what's the next scenario? Auburn with a win. They'd hold the tiebreaker over Auburn. One and done. Of course, they can't catch Tennessee. Tennessee's off limits now. 3 games up with 2 to go. South Carolina holds a tiebreaker. So how does the tiebreaker work with Alabama and Kentucky? Well, this is how it works. It's what you did against first through 14th in the conference. So here's, you have the same record. So what'd you do against the first team? Alabama lost them both. Florida lost. Okay, what'd you do against the second team in the conference? South Carolina, what happened? Third team in the conference, whoever that may be. Where they'd hold the tiebreaker over Alabama is Alabama lost and won against Auburn. Florida just beat them. So they'd hold the tiebreaker over Auburn or Alabama, but they wouldn't hold the tiebreaker over Kentucky. See, it gets kind of quirky here. But looking at it, and this is why it gets interesting. Kentucky could end up tying with Florida because Kentucky plays Vanderbilt, and then Kentucky's at Tennessee at the end of the year. Auburn, Missouri, and Georgia, not going to catch Auburn. You're a game ahead or a game behind Auburn, not going to catch them because they'll beat Missouri and they'll beat Georgia. And again, just looking at it, Florida's going to end up as the 6th seed more than likely in the tournament. That's exactly where you want to be. You don't get the double bye. You know, everybody, if they'd beat South Carolina, they had a chance at the double bye. 6th is better than the 5 seed. It is. Now, you can argue the 4 seed because you get a bye, or you get a double bye, but then you win and your reward is Tennessee. Florida doesn't have to see Tennessee. If Florida's a 6 seed, they wouldn't have to see Tennessee till the finals. I'd much rather take my chances with the likes of Auburn, who again, remember, Auburn's got who this week? Auburn's got Missouri and Georgia. So if Florida wins out, Auburn likely is going to win theirs. South Carolina likely going to win theirs, at least one of their two. So at the end, it'll be number one, Tennessee. Number two, South Carolina. Number three, Auburn. Number four, Kentucky. Or number four, Bama. Number five, Kentucky. And there's Florida at six. You want to avoid four and five. You really want to avoid five. Because five, you have to play. Now, the good thing about being the fifth seed is what? Fifth seed, you get 12 or 13. You get a bye, then you get 12 or 13. You win that, then you take on four. But then if you win that, you got to take on Tennessee. So the four seed sitting there taking on a team, and the four seed right now would be what? Looking at Auburn, looking at Bama. So, where Florida sitting as a six, is Florida take on the 11-14 winner. So they get a bye, then they take on the 11-14 winner, and then they take on the three seed, who would be Auburn. See? And then if you win that one, then you get the two seed, who's South Carolina. Then you'd get Tennessee in the finals. So being the sixth seed is where Florida wants to be. Now, how do they ensure being the sixth seed? You lose to Bama and you turn around and you beat Vandy. You're a sixth seed no matter what. Now, you win them both. There's a way you can get up to that five seed line. And the fifth seed is tough. Again, the sixth seed, I'd much rather be the sixth seed and playing the 11-14 winner and then getting to go take on the three seed, who's going to be Auburn or South Carolina, then be the five seed and play the 11-14 winner, turn around and play the four seed, which is probably Kentucky, then turn around and play Tennessee. Mm-mm. No, baby. Much rather be the sixth seed if I'm Florida. But looking at it, the way Tennessee's played, to me, I look at it like this right now in the NCAA tournament where we sit. Tennessee's probably a one. There's no two. There's no two in this conference right now. not in the big picture. I guess if Auburn found a way to win the SEC tournament, they could work their way up to a two with where they sit right now, but they need some help. Tennessee's a one. Right now, probably Alabama and Auburn are threes. Auburn being the stronger of the three. And then what? South Carolina's probably a five. Kentucky's a five. So Tennessee's a one. Alabama, Auburn are threes. Tennessee or Kentucky and South Carolina are fives. And then Florida probably sits there as what? Seven or an eight. If Florida wins both of their games this week, they're probably up to a seven. If they're taking on the 11 or 14 seed, they're not really going to benefit that. They'll probably stay at a seven. Because remember, there's going to be teams pulling upsets that are making their way through this tournament that we didn't expect to be in there. If Florida can somehow beat like an Auburn or an Alabama or a South Carolina in the tournament, if Florida can get to the semifinals of the SEC, then they're probably a six. If they'd win the whole sucker, they're a five. They're not going to get any higher than a five. So that's the Gators' path, the SEC treks, SEC tournament treks. So much more beneficial for Florida to be the sixth seed than the five or the four. Much more beneficial. But look, they're 9-3 in their last 12 games. And in all three of those losses, this is what's kind of screwy about it, right? They had the lead against Alabama late, lost it. Had the lead against A&M, lost it. Had the lead against South Carolina about 5 minutes to go, lost it. They led in every single one of those games with 5 minutes to go, if not less than 2 minutes to go. So they're right there. And then conversely, they blew a big lead against LSU, found a way to win it, came back against Kentucky because of a missed free throw at the beginning of this run. So look, the Gators belong. Maybe it comes together and where they weren't able to close during the regular season, they closed during the SEC tournament. Can this team win the SEC tournament? As long as they don't have to play Tennessee. I think Florida can beat every team in this tournament except Tennessee. And the more I watch them, I don't think Florida can beat Kentucky either. Not now. I know they beat them. It were up a month ago. It's a different beast right now. When Kentucky's on, only one team in the conference can beat them, Tennessee. When Tennessee's on, no team in the conference can beat them. I think, you know, the thing about it is, though, if Kentucky's a five or a four and Tennessee's a one, they're going to have to play each other before the finals. So it's a good conference this year. But looking at it, Florida's probably seven or eight as this week begins. They beat Alabama, beat Vandy. They're a strong seven. As long as they don't get bounced in the first round of the tournament, SEC tournament, could work their way up to a six. They win the conference, they'll be a five. So that's your SEC tournament trek for the Florida Gators. Speaking of NCAA or college sports, the NCAA says, that's it. We're done getting sued. I'm done. We're done. We're no longer going to try to enforce this NIL stuff. Keep losing. And if I'm the NCAA, I wouldn't enforce it. Why? The NCAA is trying to provide guidelines, trying to put rules in place. Every time they try to put a rule in place, they get sued. So until school presidents, and this is one of these things that the NCAA, I get the criticism, but for this, you're just being, if you're ripping the NCAA now for, oh, they don't know what they're doing with NIL. You're right. Nobody does. Although at least they're trying to enforce rules and laws, trying more than, you know, Greg Sankey, more than any other conference commissioner. You tell me what the conference commissioners have done about NIL. Nothing. Why? Because the conference commissioners are in there and they're puppets at the end of the day, controlled by the major money, major school presidents. The conference commissioners are no different than Roger Goodell in the NFL. No different. The commissioner is the lead athletic director. The commissioner is the lead school president. Like Roger Goodell is the leader of the owners. It's what it is. And as I watch this start to unfold, the NCAA is just saying, hey, look, we keep losing these things. Not anymore. So now it's up to the conferences to make the rules. We're just going to break away and do our own thing. Okay. Can't wait to see what NIL rules you put into effect. I can't wait. Look, this is, we talked about this for months now. If they want to switch this, if they want to change this, this is easy. Well, not easy, but you create a cap. You make the students employees. You make the football players employees. You pay them. Make them sign two-year contracts. And then after 2 years, they can re-sign another two-year contract. If not, they can leave and go sign another two-year contract somewhere else. Collectively bargained, fair. That's how you do it. But with the NIL, do you think Greg Sankey's going to get in the way of Texas or Texas A&M and their big money? Stop. Who are you kidding? Smell what you're shoveling. Do you see the Big Ten getting in the way of Ohio State or Michigan or USC? Come on. No way. Or Oregon? No way. Not going to happen. So NCAA says no mas. We're not getting sued anymore. You can get sued. Good luck enforcing this stuff. Could you imagine the minute the conferences come out and go, okay, well, if you only can transfer twice in your college career if you take NIL money. Athlete sues the school, sues his conference. Conference goes to court. Court beats them over the head like they've done the NCAA. The NCAA has been the whipping boy in all of this. Not anymore. Not anymore. Don't have me to kick around anymore. Good luck. And, you know, as you start to craft language, or at least try to, if you're the commissioner suited to rein this in, NCAA said, we tried. We lost. We tried. We lost. You boys figure it out. You keep threatening them. So this is the NCAA saying, we're not, call your bluff. You guys figure it out. So what do you do if you're the conference commissioners? You can't enforce anything. They'll threaten the NCAA again. The NCAA is like, whatever. Done. It's like in a relationship. If you don't get your act together, I'm leaving. If you don't get your act together, I'm leaving. If you don't get your act together, I'm leaving. Finally, the one party says, you know what? Then go. Go. Go for it. And that's what the NCAA is. I'm tired of it. You figure it out. We'll enforce it. You craft it. We're all going to come together. And maybe the NCAA with this one's like, okay, let's get all the five commissioners, the four major commissioners together. Let's get together and let's put up something together. What's your input? What do you want to do? Because right now it's been the conferences going, hey, you figure it out on your own. Hey, you figure it out on your own. You enforce this NCAA. They enforce it. They get sued. And the ADs and the presidents are like, thank God it's not us. Now it's you. Just you, Ace. Just you. So fascinated to see where this goes. And what conference is going to be the first one to go, okay, here's what we're going to do. Because the one that could do it first and set the bar would be the Big Ten because they've got the most money. But does the SEC come along and try to do more money? Don't know. The Big 12 and the ACC don't have as much money. If they come out and say, okay, we're going to pay you $100,000 a year per player and you have to sign a two-year deal, the SEC will come along and go, we'll pay you $150,000 and it's only a one-year deal. See, that's what's, you got, whatever it has to be the same for all four conferences. This is the tricky part. Whatever's collectively bargained here has to be the same for all four conferences, and that's the problem. You essentially have, could you imagine in the NFC and the AFC and the NFL that if each owner in each division of each conference had their own rules, the AFC West had their own rules opposed to the NFC East? That's what this is. But actually, it'd be more like the, because remember, you're dividing this up into two different leagues with 16 teams in each. It'd be like, okay, The AFC's got their own rules. The NFC has their own. Baseball had this for a while with the DH and some other things that were a little quirky. Obviously, it's uniform and platform now. Can't wait to see what school presidents and ADs do. Besides shoving the NCAA up front and saying, Mikey will eat it. Eat it, Mikey. Not anymore. Okay. Wanted to wrap with this. The NFL. This is not going to be popular. You know, in the last podcast, we talked about some rule changes at the National Football League. Floated, and some of them, I get what they're trying to do with like onside kicks or kickoffs where it was like, okay, well, the XFL did this where you line up 10 yards apart down the field and the kicking team can't move until the ball is caught. The other thing they want to get rid of is with the fair catch inside the 25 that it automatically gets taken out to the 25. I get those as they try to revamp this rule. And this is a prime example of you can make football safer, but you'll never make it safe. And then, you know, the fumbling through the end zone, we had that in the last podcast. This one's a little bit more bizarre because the NFL is trying to meet everyone in the middle here. Don't be fooled by they're trying to get rid of, oh, this is awful. They're trying to get rid of the onside kick. They're actually trying to save it. And here's how they're trying to save it. They are making you announce when you're going to do it. Well, that'll get rid of surprise onside kicks in the NFL. When's the last time you saw one of those? The onside kick return rate is what? Recovery rate's like 4%. Is it 3%? And think about where we were 10 years ago, where you could kick the ball and the first four guys running could light up the defender without him even knowing the ball, looking up in the air, boom, they get hit. So trying to protect the players. That's the definition of a defensive player. Oh, they're ruining it. Okay, what's the suggestion then? And by forcing teams to say when you're going to do it, by the way, the surprise on kick is the same thing as why people say that pitchers need to hit. Oh, because it adds strategy. Oh yeah. That's why I go to watch Major League Baseball. Remember to see utility infielder pinch hit for the pitcher and take his spot in the lineup and the pitcher hit where the second baseman hit in the 12th inning. That's why I go to watch. Good God. It's like fouling out in basketball. Stupid too. Remember every foul after six should be a technical two shots in the ball. Keep your stars in the game as much as possible. We protect quarterbacks. Should do it in other sports too. But with this, they want you to now say that you're going to go for it, and they'll allow you to put six guys on one side of the ball. Remember how you have to have five? Like you can't overstack it. Okay, we're going to go for an onside kick now. You're like, oh, that's not fair. You know, at the end of the game, it's coming anyway. 95% of onside kicks. You know it's coming, and the recovery rate's only 3.5-4%. So, you know, the majority of these are coming. Now you're telling everybody, here comes the onside kick. They're saving it. This rule's saving it. And then you move six, and they're saying, okay, you're allowed to overstack. You're allowed to put six guys on that side. Why? Because now the defense can prepare for it. The return team can have five guys up there blocking. Here it comes, six guys, an overbalanced or overweighted side. It's smart. Now, here's the thing. The one tricky thing about this would be, okay, you can tell everybody you're going to onside kick it. Can you still kick it away? If you don't like the lineup, okay, we're going to kick it away now. I think you should be allowed to say you're going to kick the onside kick and not kick it. That's got to be the caveat. And we're going to do an onside kick here. We change our mind. That's the difference. So how about that? And also, they're trying to do whatever they can to save this sucker. And it's not as simple as, I'll just go back to the way it was. You can't do that anymore. So you have to find alternatives. This is a way to save it. Hey, it's coming. Set up your defense. You know it's coming at the end of games anyway. The problem is that you can't overstack a side because there's still a chance you may not do it. If you now can tell people, then you can overstack a side and they can compensate on the kick return side of things. Don't think it's that bad of a plan. Now, will it pass? I doubt it. What do you need, 24 to 32? Doubt it. But it's not the worst idea. It's not. Once you sit through and think about it, this is the equivalent of, you know, firefighters when they've got like a raging wildfire, forest fire, where they burn in advance. They burn like a couple miles down the road. So that way, when the fire gets to the burned out area, it stops. That's what you're doing. You're burning a circular path around a wildfire to get it to stop. You're saving it by announcing it. Not a bad idea. Harp on Sports, the Bar, podcast, media, audio, radio network. Follow, share, like, subscribe at Harp on Sports Twitter, at Harp on Sports Instagram, Harp on Sports Auditory Route, Buzzsprout, Spotify, Apple Podcast under the Bar, Harp on Sports Facebook page, Harp on Sports YouTube channel under the Bar, and of course, harponsports.com. Remember, stay clean, stay focused, stay strong. Frankenstein. Have fun with your friends.